Hello and welcome to another episode of Pittsburgh Sports Memories. On this episode, we're going to do Pittsburgh's favorite sports traditions. As you know, lots of teams and cities around the country have their, and around the world, quite frankly, have their own traditions. But I don't think none are as quite as unique or as memorable as Pittsburgh. And well, I might be not objective about that. I might be a little biased since I grew up here and live here. But at least in this episode, we're going to cover all the different traditions that I could think of and or remember. And Tim, Help me out. As usual, Tim Hannon is joining me. I'm Steve Wirt.
Yeah, this should be fun because there is a lot of good traditions when you go through Pittsburgh sports history.
Yes. So I kind of organized these into old or defunct, and I think I had current, and then I have timeless. So we'll start with the old and defunct. So if you're younger, maybe you're one of those darn millennials we keep hearing about. You probably might not be very familiar with this. The Steelers Polka, it was written by a gentleman named Jimmy Pasulish. My Greek is not that good, so I apologize to him. He was a Greek immigrant to the United States in 1947. He actually changed his name to Jimmy Pole. And then he got big in the radio. He ran his own radio station for a while. And to capitalize on the Steelers' success in the early to, you know, 70s, he wrote a polka called the Steelers Polka. And the song goes to the tune of the Pennsylvania Polka. And I'm going to play this now.
That great football team. We cheer the Pittsburgh Steelers. Chuck Knoll and all his friends are all on the beat. Go out and get them Steelers. Bradshaw and Rocky and Franco and Lee. We love you, Pittsburgh Steelers. It's been many years in coming. Just keep that Steeler machinery humming.
All right, well, you get the idea that it's kind of just a name check kind of polka, but it is the Pennsylvania polka. Fun thing was my wife's grandmother actually had that on a 45 record. So we're really dating ourselves there. It's just kind of very Steeler. Like, I remember the Houston Oilers had like a country music song for there. So it's very fits the I don't know, what would you say, the ethnicity of Pittsburgh there, at least back in the 70s, a lot of great polka and Polish people and Germans and such, like their polka music. So good times are had. There was a remake by a group called Gene the Werewolf. I'm not going to play that because I think it's horrible, but there'll be links to all this on our website, which is Pittsburgh Sports Memories at weebly.com.
And Steve, I talked about this in a previous episode when we talked about the Steelers of the 80s. It was a fun song, but man, they played it forever. And all the way into like the late 80s, if we scored a touchdown, they would play this song. And it was so dated at that point. It's like, it's, you know, Merrill Hodge or somebody would score a touchdown and they'd be like Franco and Lynn Swan. And, you know, it's like those guys,
they never updated.
I think those guys retired years ago. Yeah. Like, why are we still playing this song?
Well, at least it made the lyrics easier to remember, at least. But poor Jimmy Pole passed away in 2012. He had a pretty cool obituary in the Post Gazette. We'll try and link to that. Hopefully you don't get jammed up by the Post Gazette's paywall on that. But just a hint, clear your web browser if you ever do, because the Post Gazette isn't smart enough to figure out a way to block that. So see, you get tips on how to save money here on the Pittsburgh Sports Memories podcast. moving on, the Pitt Victory Song, it was written with lyrics in 1916. The song has actual lyrics, and it has a part where it has like a whole bunch of lyrics, but at the one part, it's where you're supposed to say, "Fight, pit, fight." And this was written back in 1916, and it's been around forever. And it kind of stayed fight, pit, fight until I would say the 70s when the students started chanting Penn State sucks instead. So let me see if I can get that to play right now. Maybe I can.
I miss that so
much. I miss saying that. I miss that part of the song. Yeah. So what happened was that went on for like, what, 20 or 30 years. And in 2001, Steve Peterson, who was athletic director at the time, got embarrassed and decided to demand ordered the pit band to stop playing it. And I assume he did this while clutching his pearls and saying, "Oh my goodness," or "Well, I never," you know, or something like that.
Yeah, and that's what they did. Like, they actually just cut out that part of the fight song. They still play the fight song, but they cut out that dun, 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 dun. Like, they just cut out that whole part.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess they figured that was undignified for a University of Pitt's stature. And, you know, what a party pooper. And, you know, hey, it's better than what the West Virginia fans chant at Pitt games. So,
yeah, that's true. We use cleaner language, at least. And it's back now, right? They play that part of the song now. But I think now, because there's no more rivalry with Penn State, it just kind of nobody ever says that anymore except us old timers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's whatever. Yeah, who cares? let the students have their fun. But anyway, another defunct tradition in the Pitt. And Pitt doesn't have very many like traditions that, you know, are longstanding. But unfortunately, that's one of them that went away. another one that I guess this is like just an up. It was kind of like an update. You were complaining about the updated the Steelers polka. Well, in 1994, a gentleman named Roger Wood wrote the song "Here We Go Steelers," and it's pretty much the same song all the time. But this time, instead of like the Franco and Harris, they updated it. It's not a polka. It's like a more of a modern song, and they would just update the names. And I remember them updating the names because at one part they say, you know, get 3 points off of Anderson/Johnson/Boswell's toe, you know, and all the other kicker, I guess it was Reed and, you know, Peterson and whoever else we had as a kicker. But I think I have that one. Let me see.
Oh man.
Here we go. This is the most recent. Here we go. Well, not really. You'll hear why.
Here we go. Steelers. Here we go. Pittsburgh's going to the Super Bowl. Here we go.
Cheer the Steelers. Black and the gold.
Here we go.
This town of Pittsburgh's heart and soul.
Here we go.
The Steeler Nation has the best fans. We are from Pittsburgh, the 6-time Super Bowl champ.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Steelers, here we go. Pittsburgh's gone to the Super Bowl. Here we go.
Coach Tomlin is ready to win.
Here we go.
With Johnson, Juju, Claypool, and Ben.
Here we go.
We'll go to Connor when we need a touchdown.
And if you get in his way, he's gonna knock you around.
Well, see, I had no idea they were still making this.
Yeah, and the best part is they're gonna have to change it again because that's still a Connor in it. So as of this is 2021, they'll have to go to Harris. Najee Harris will knock you around, I guess. So this guy's like going to be in business forever. So in 2005, they actually had to change the lyrics because it used to be, this will be the year we win the one for the thumb. And they had to change it because we won one for the thumb. And I guess if I let the whole song play the whole way through, it says that we're going to win one for the other thumb now. So,
oh, nice. That gives you some space there. You don't have to change it for a while. It's very smart, very practical. Yeah, this song was so polarizing, Steve. I mean, and it's kind of faded now. Like I said, I had no idea they were still making it. I would say it's definitely not as part of the consciousness as it used to be. But do you remember, like, in the 90s, especially, I felt like that song was so polarizing. Like, people were either loved it or hated it.
I don't remember anybody hating it, but I remember, like, a guy we remember Seth, we went to high school with, he was a Browns fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, I gave him a ride somewhere, and they came on, and I remember, like, blasting, like, my radio just to be annoying. But you know me, I'm ever the pot stirrer, I guess. I guess Roger will be there in business forever there until he doesn't want to make these anymore. But I don't hear, like, you used to hear it on, like, B94, or what would it be, like, Star 100.7 or 96.1. Not that I don't really listen to 96.1 anymore. I guess I'm too old for that. So I don't know if they still play that or what.
Yeah, I have not heard
who
it a lot.
Who listens to the radio anymore?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who listens to the radio? Everybody listens to podcasts.
That's right. That's
now,
what they should be doing. Especially this one.
Yeah. Another great thing of the tradition of the past was and this kind of is current but not really. I still list it as like old. I always consider it kind of old or not done anymore. Playing We Are Family. So it was the late 70s. It was the disco, baby. I was like 4 years old. Tim was like what, two, maybe one. Platform shoes were in style. Disco Stew was boogieing down, and Studio 54 was wrapping up its run. Meanwhile, on the baseball season of the 79, the Pirates were 9 games out of first place. And all that changed when Willie Stargell made the team song We Are Family by Sister Sledge. And our good old Pirates boogied all the way to a World Series win. Fun facts about Sister Sledge is they're an R&B quartet of actual sisters, Debbie, Joni, Kim, and Kathy. They're all from Philadelphia. This was their biggest hit, peaking at number 2 on the Billboard pop charts, number 1 on the R&B charts. That's my best Casey Kasem there. And they actually sang the national anthem in front of 45,000 people in Three River Stadium at the opener, I think, the following season. So, and the song is briefly played after Take Me Out to the Ball Game during the seventh inning stretch at PNC Park. After they play, you'll hear it like ever so briefly, but they don't play it very long. So I guess it's still kind of around, but not really.
That song, I mean, unlike some of the future ones we're going to talk about on this list, that was really associated with one team, that 79 team. Like you really, it was never associated with any of the other teams. Not that any other teams ever won anything after that, but had the Pirates, even those teams they had in the early 90s, like that song just wasn't associated with those teams. It was always that 79 team. So I think that's kind of where it'll forever stay.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like some of the other ones you'll see on this list, like, are, should we say, borrowed, or we'll say shared. It would be nice. Shared with other cities and such. So you'll see kind of like that as we go on, that maybe not all these traditions are uniquely Pittsburgh completely, but we've kind of put our own twist on it and made it our own. I don't remember if anybody will remember this except for me, but I remember this. In Three River Stadium, after the Pirates would win, the scoreboard would play that last clip from The Wizard of Oz. Here, I actually have this one here.
place like home.
Okay, and it would always, like, I always thought that was, I don't know, when my 10-year-old self thought that was pretty cool. Because, like, then it would put, like, the end, like, they'd have, like, the little the end credit and the music from The Wizard of Oz. So it was just a cool way to end a pirate game. They play some, like, pirate song at the end of the game that I did not include on our list of traditions because I don't think it's all that great of a tradition. But
if it's a song that they only play after a win, then I'm guessing you probably don't hear it a whole lot these days.
Yeah, probably not. Another great thing they used to kind of do at the Pirates game was now this you might have heard more, I don't know, but the Pirates were good back then. So if the Pirates were down a couple runs late in the game, like before the ninth inning, I also remember the scoreboard playing, and this was a heavily edited version of this, of Bluto's speech from Animal House by John Belushi. And I cannot include a clip of this because there is a lot more swearing in it than I remember. I was watching it as I was prepping for that. I was like, wow, there's a lot of swearing in this. But it's still the funniest line is, you know, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? And he's like, what? And it's like, don't stop him. He's on a roll, you know? but just a classic speech by John Belushi. He's definitely the funnier Belushi than Jim Belushi, but it maybe not as successful as Renegade later on there, but hey, it couldn't have hurt, right? Do you remember either of those, Tim, at all from the games at all?
I don't remember the Wizard of Oz thing. Yeah, I don't remember the Wizard of Oz thing, but I vaguely remember Animal House because at the time I didn't really know what that movie was. You know, I think I might have known who John Belushi was, but I didn't know. I'd never seen Animal House. So I remember thinking, like, I don't know what that is, but seems kind of funny.
Because it was just like him yelling, let's do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that's the moving on to the stuff that is currently going on with the old Buccos here. Or not Buccos, but traditions. But the first one is a pirate tradition that they've, we'll say, share with a couple other teams in baseball. So in 1999, the Pirates started having people in pierogi costumes race around the outfield track. Just in case anybody's confused, those aren't like somehow genetically engineered pierogies with legs. There's people inside those costumes. So it's become a hit, an instant hit, and it's become a tradition ever since. Just in case you were curious what the names of the pierogies were, there's a Potato Pete, Jalapeno Hannah, Cheese Chester, Sauerkraut Saul, and Oliver, the highly intelligent Oliver Onion, and Bacon Bert and Pizza Penny. And I think Bacon Bert and Pizza Penny are kind of new. And Potato Pete is retired because I guess he cheats too much, but he had to come out of retirement because I forget what year. I think it was in 2015 or 2014. The Cheese Chester broke their foot during a race, and the Pirates actually literally put them on a 15-day disabled list. And Cheese Chester had to go to Altoona for rehab. I'm not making that up. He literally ran a race against some other thing they do in Altoona. So Cheese Chester, I don't know if he won his rehab race or not or what place, but the Pirates reactivated him from the disabled list, and Potato Pete went back into the freezer. They locked him in a freezer because he was cheating too much. So like I said, if you remember, they race sausages in Milwaukee, and they race presidents in Washington for the Nationals. And of course, the infamous incident in, you know, Milwaukee, where Randall Simon hit the top of a sausage. There's not really a person's head there, but the Milwaukee DA totally overreacted to that. But I guess the pierogies go up to Milwaukee, and I don't know if they return the favor and come back here and they race, you know, if there's like a home and home or how they work the scheduling on that. But the pierogies race the sausages, and they also race the presidents. And I think in Washington, Teddy Roosevelt never wins. Is that there's one of the presidents who never wins in that race. So I don't know. I do remember this distinctly, is that when I went to the Military Bowl in 2015 between Pitt and Navy, they had the pierogies and the presidents race each other at halftime. So, like, they ran all the way across the football field.
Nice.
And I don't remember. I think one of the pierogies did win that race. And I really tried really hard. I really did do about 5 different Google searches on this, and I could not find a statistics on which pierogi is the all-time wins leader. So I don't know. Like, what good is the internet if you don't have that information? That's the kind of – I mean, I'm not looking for, like, the boiling point of water at sea level here. I want to know which pierogi is the all-time wins leader in pierogi race history, right?
And you know somebody's tracking it somewhere.
I couldn't find it. If somebody finds it, please let me know, because I would love to know, like, who is the all-time win leader. It's probably – I think it's Oliver Onion, because he's highly intelligent. So, but, I mean, that's just always good fun, and it's very Pittsburgh. And, you know, I've run into people who didn't know what a pierogi was. Have you ever had that? Like, how do you not know?
Well, I mean, if you've never, I've that's kind of a unique food, because I've run into people that don't know what, like, a hoagie is, you know, but they know what a sub is. Like, they have different names for it than we have locally. But pierogi, I mean, it's one of those foods. I don't know if it's that common. I mean, how many chain restaurants can you go to? Ones that are, like, over the country, like Applebee's. How many chain restaurants can you go to and order pierogies?
Well, you know what they call it, a wonton, which is really just a, you know, a Japanese pierogi, Chinese pierogi,
basically.
I mean, it's meat wrapped in dough. You know, it's not that revolutionary. I mean, I guess it is to some people. And Mrs. T's, I didn't realize Mrs. T's is a regional brand. I didn't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that's a food that that doesn't surprise me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, we had some friends from Michigan, and we're like, "Oh, yeah, you want pierogies?" And they're like, "What's a pierogi?" And me and my wife looked at me like, "What? Huh?"
Yeah, I mean, there's people I've come across, people that didn't know what wedding soup was. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you just think that I've eaten that my whole life here in Pittsburgh, and so everybody else would probably know what that is, and they don't always.
Yeah, I'm not sure what was going on there. So next up, another tradition that's, I guess this is more recent. So Justin Acherno was the director of ticket marketing for Pitt football in 2008. And you talk about a tough job. Wow. I mean, that's right up there with, you know, I don't know. What's a tough job? Nuclear scientist? I don't know. I know. Genetics, some sort of genetic neurology. I mean, something, you're really smart to do that. So he brainstormed with some fans and came up with an idea of playing the 1970 hit song by Neil Diamond, Sweet Caroline, in between the third and fourth quarters. And this would be, they actually put the lyrics up so people knew to sing along. I was there the first time they did it, and everybody was kind of confused, but I would say within like a minute, everybody kind of jumped in and started singing along with it. But so, and they replaced the one part that goes bum 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 with "Let's Go Pitt." So I mean, it's pretty cool. Pitt actually played the song for a first time in a home football game, and they were actually losing to Buffalo at that point. And Pitt came back and won the game, 27-16. So that entrenched it there. I remember one time I was at a wedding and they played "Sweet Caroline" and everybody chanted the "Let's Go Pitt" and "Go Pitt" go at part. So that was pretty cool. Unfortunately, in 2016, another, like, much like Steve Pearson, another athletic director got too smart for their own good. Heather Like changed it from being played after the third quarter to any time during the game. And now the official word is this is to anytime they felt fan engagement was lacking or the team needed a boost. Like, they tried to try and make it into like a renegade type thing. But the real reason was we're all being punished because we all, there was a game against Oklahoma State. Actually, Mason Rudolph was the quarterback, where they were like beating Pitt by like 40 points by the by the halftime, and everybody left after Sweet Caroline in the third quarter. You know, in between the third, and you know, I guess Heather didn't like that. So
people would have definitely stuck around had you, you know, played it in the fourth quarter.
Just to an empty stadium of like whatever amount of Oklahoma State fans were left, you know.
Yeah, that's overthinking that one a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Other teams use this song. This is another like shared tradition. The most notably, the Boston Red Sox, which kind of makes me ugh. But you know, it's a the Pitt one. I don't know. I like the Pitt version. So,
did we have it first or did they?
I think they probably had it first.
Okay, so your marketing director that's all smart maybe kind of just reused an idea that the Boston Red Sox already had. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know if he's all smart. I just said he had a tough job.
You compared him to a nuclear scientist. Like
I mean, that's a tough job. I mean, doesn't mean you're good at it. I mean, the guy that was running Chernobyl had a tough job. Doesn't mean he was good at it. It still doesn't make the job any easier.
Touche.
But nuclear accidents aside, and I mean, I could say, you know, it's like selling, you know, ice to, you know, I want to say, you know, Inuits, but Ecuador. I'm just going to say ice to Eskimos or coal to, you know, Africa or whatever, you know, up there with that. But moving on, the song Renegade, we've mentioned it a couple of times. This has definitely become a huge Pittsburgh tradition. And this is still, they still play this at the games right today, right?
Yes. Well, when there's people there again, hopefully they will.
Okay. Let me see. Renegade, it's a Styx songs. They have like a little video they play to get the fans and the players hyped up during the game. The song actually peaked in 1979 at 16 on the Billboard charts. And it's the last song that is normally played at a Styx concert. So it was never really that big of a hit. It just kind of like, taking on a life of its own because of like the Steelers being so popular. I would say the opposite is of like selling Steeler tickets. If you're the director of Steeler ticket marketing, it would be the easiest job in the world. It's the opposite of Pitt ticket market. I mean, it's just like, hey, do you want some Steeler tickets? Yes. And there's like millions of people who want them, you know, so that's a pretty easy sell there. Here's a little clip of the Renegade song.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home. Oh, mama, I can hear you a-crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Okay, yeah, if that didn't get you pumped up for the Steelers defense to go on the field, nothing will. The Pens actually played a version of, well, it's still Renegade, but they put like their highlights before the stadium series against the Flyers. What do you remember? What year was that when they played in Heinz Field? Was that
I was at that game. I want to say 2018, somewhere around
right.
There.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they actually, I guess, because the Steelers, they had like. I have a video of that, but it's like a fan video, so I'm not going to share that one because it's just like a bunch of fans like yelling and screaming, but it's real pretty cool. Would you say that – I've heard you say this before, judicious use of this song. You know, it's an important – talk about an important job at least, you know, outside of, you know, engineering, you know, running a nuclear power plant is probably running the – deciding when to play Renegade in a Steeler game. because I mean, you could decide the outcome of the game.
You there were a few times where they played it and had like magical powers, and I want to say that 2008 season was probably one of the ones. I mean, they were playing Baltimore at home, and we were down by two scores, and they played it, and Lamar Woodley got like a fumble return touchdown right after that on defense. They played it the Dallas game that year where Deshae Townsend picked off Tony Romo in the final seconds, pick six to win the game. And then the AFC Championship where Troy picked off Flacco. I mean, there was definitely some, it had like magical powers at that point. And then into the next decade when the defense was kind of not anywhere near where it had been, you know, they'd play it and everybody be on their feet and screaming. And then like the other team would just kind of drive down the field and get like a bunch of first downs and score a touchdown. And it'd be like, oh, so, you
oh,
know,
mama.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a good, like it, when you're at the game, you know, it's coming because they turn off the scoreboards. Like usually they have ads and stuff going and everything gets like dark on the screens. Everything just turns off and everybody just starts rising to their feet because they know that means Renegade's coming. And it like jacks up the whole crowd. And it's, I was in favor of retiring it. I've been in favor of retiring it, but at this point I'm kind of okay keeping it around just because it's fun. It just doesn't have the magic that it used to have. And it's kind of like that Steelers polka song where, yeah, it didn't like name players from that era. It wasn't like Aaron Smith and James Ferrier, like it didn't have their names in the song like the polka song, but it has that same kind of thing where it's like, yeah, this was really about those teams and those defenses. So I don't know. I'm kind of ambivalent at this point because it's still a fun song and it really gets the crowd going, really gets the players going. It's fun.
Yeah, and I think it's single-handedly responsible for the trip to Super Bowl 43 because it's, you know, definitely. And I wonder if Tony Romo predicted his interception, you know, when before he threw it to the Deshae Townsend. Like, yeah, I think I'm gonna throw a pick right to the Deshae Townsend here.
Well, a fun fact about that play is he actually mocked the Steelers defense, called a timeout before that play. And he like was, couldn't believe it. He was saying like to the players, you guys called a timeout because Dallas was trying to drive in the final seconds. The game was tied. And he's like, why would you call a timeout, dummies? And then he threw a pick six on the next play.
Well, who's the dummy now? I guess the guy making six figures to like watch a football game.
Yeah,
he's really dumb.
What an idiot that guy is.
Moving on from an analyst turned golfer / quarterbacks, the Penguins, our first Penguins one. The Penguins goal songs, and they've had a few of them that I can remember. I don't know if they had any back in the 70s or what they were, but I don't even remember any in the 80s. I didn't go to very many. I went to a few Penguins games, but not that many. But I remember Blur's song 2. It's like, woohoo. People call it the woohoo song. And Liverpool Football Club has that as a goal song. A lot of teams use that song. I know why they changed to this song. Now, the song they had before that in the 90s was a song by Gary Glitter, and it's called Rock and Roll Song Part 2. And most people just call it the Hey Song. We'll play a little bit of that song for you now. All right, that's Gary Glitter. This song, his part two song, really wasn't that big of a hit. It was they're a British band, and until it became a goal song in the NHL and minor league hockey games, and it was like really played by everybody, that Hey song, and Gary Glitter had quite the little like cottage industry out of just like, you know, all these teams playing the song. I guess he got rights, but unfortunately Gary Glitter had a I don't know how to put it. He got himself in some trouble with underage people doing not very nice things. So the NHL actually banned his song from being used. You're not allowed to play that as a goal song in the NHL. So that's probably big. That and the scandal was a big reason that the Penguins had to switch to Blur song too. So after that, the Penguins went to Andrew WK Party Hard, and that was from like 2015 to 2019. And I think people really liked that. And, but then they switched in 2019 to Jump Around for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe they just thought after 4 years. But then they brought it back because I guess everybody liked that Andrew WK song. So I don't know. I always remember more of the Hey song after Goals than the House of Pain song, or Andrew WK.
Yeah, I remember that too. That was a shame that went away, and I know why it didn't. It makes sense, but it's still a shame that it went away because that's the song that I think a lot of Pens fans will always associate with the team more so than any of the other ones, like you said.
And a fun thing and an interesting thing is, like, you don't hear that song at all, except I went and saw the movie Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. And in that movie, they have a clip where he like dances around like as the Joker, like when he's like descending into his like madness to the Hey song. And I couldn't believe they played it during the movie because I imagine they had to pay Gary Glitter for that. I mean, you can't just use a song. I mean, when it was happening, I said, I can't believe they're doing this. But hey, he really like stuck it to him. So he could have like retired off that money, you know. But, his loss is Andrew WK's gain, I guess. So staying with the Penguins theme, these are more Sidney Crosby superstitions. He wears he always does this. He wears the same hat for post game interviews and practice. And like, you can look at like, has like all kinds of like sweat stains and stuff on it. And there's actually was an interesting story. The one year he had, Sid was supposed to have a meeting with like, I guess like kids that are like had, you know, illnesses like cancer and such. And he had gotten sick and hadn't made it. And the one kid he was supposed to hang out with in bowl, gave a hat, and the hat made it to Sid, and Sid made that his hat for the whole season. And you can see like, it'd be funny if you could do like a progression from like October to whenever they're out of the playoffs, like the deterioration of that hat. But it's always something I always thought was pretty interesting. It's pretty gross, but like I said, I have my Pirates hat, and I've had this for like 10 years, and I'm kind of in the same situation with Sid. I'm kind of superstitious about it. So I always think it kind of brings me good luck. So although I haven't won any Stanley Cups or anything, but
not yet.
Yeah, you never know. Touching the Prince of Wales trophy, which is an interesting one. The Prince of Wales trophy is awarded to the team that wins the Eastern Conference and makes the Stanley Cup finals. Most teams have a superstition of not touching it, but the Penguins in 91 and 92, Mario and all the guys like were totally all over the Prince of Wales trophy, and they won the cup final both times. So in 2008, Crosby stuck with the tradition of not touching it. And of course they lost in the final that year. So in the next year, when they went back and they touched the cup, they touched the Prince of Wales trophy. And of course, that's the memorable run where, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury makes the save in game 7. Yeah. We covered that season in a previous podcast. So, but it's become now, I guess it's a Penguin tradition to always touch the Prince of Wales trophy. So a fun fact about the Prince of Wales trophy, it's actually named after Edward VIII, the King of England, for like 1 year. He was the Prince of Wales in 1925 when the trophy was created. And an even more fun fact about Edward VIII was he was a Nazi sympathizer who abdicated the crown to marry a socialite from Baltimore named Wallace Simpson. So if you haven't tell, I've watched a lot of The Crown. So
That was part of the plot line in that King's Speech movie too, because that's why George became king, was because his brother abdicated.
Well, that's why we have Queen Elizabeth now, because if that never would have happened,
I mean, right?
I don't know if him and Wallace Simpson would have had any kids, but oh well. Well, that's enough about British monarchy, I guess. The British monarchy part of our podcast is now over. You'll learn about Henry VIII later. Now we're going to go to the timeless ones. These are the ones that are probably going to be around for long after I have shuffled off this mortal coil. Tim might still be here to doing the podcast, but these ones are probably some of my favorites. And this is one of my personal favorites. I don't know a lot of people know about this, but it's one of my personal favorites. I just kind of have a personal connection with this. The Cathedral of Learning in Oakland is a tall skyscraper. It's 535 feet tall, and it has 42 stories. It's also done in the Gothic style. It houses some pit classroom and has these nationality rooms, which in, like, full disclosure, I've never been to. It's kind of like one of those things you always like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that someday, and then you just never do it. So, yeah. It looks like some sort of, like, somebody – like time traveled like a medieval tower from, like, you know, the, you know, medieval times to us. So no word on whether you have to eat your chicken with your hands while you're in there, but the pit has, like, these lights that light up the top, and they only turn them on after when Pitt wins a big football or basketball game or a national championship, which you can figure, those lights haven't been turned on too much. And actually, a fun story I was reading about while researching this is they have another light that goes, like, a blue light that goes up as part of the victory lights. And, like, somebody was like, oh, you got to, like, turn it off after so long because the birds get disoriented in it. I'm like, whatever. But, it's just a really cool tradition that, like I said, given the current state of Pitt athletics, probably doesn't happen too often. So
it's a cool building. Yeah, I knew they turned on the lights. I didn't remember what, like, had to prompt that. But you're right. It's a very cool building, and definitely one that, you know, anybody that's visiting that area should go check out. I had a couple of classes in there when I was at Pitt, and it was just neat to be in the building.
Well, you've been in the building more than I have, so.
Well, I had to be, something. So, you know, I can't say that I went in there as, like, a tourist. I was taking classes, and that's where they told me to go, so.
Well, did the bathroom stalls still don't have any doors?
When I went there, the men's bathroom, it was on, like, the third floor or something, yes, did not have any doors on the stalls. That was 20 years still ago, amazing. So I do not know if that has changed or not.
I cannot vouch. A more personal story, and I know that I was I'm debate. I'm just gonna tell it. It's a cool story. And it means a lot to me, and is you can file this under cool story, bro. I had an illness, and I was in the hospital, and the room I was in Shadyside Hospital, and so the room I was in was facing the Cathedral of Learning. And at that time, Pitt was playing, so that would make this 2019, probably like September. Yeah, definitely September. They're playing Central Florida, which isn't a huge rival, but they really killed Pitt the year before. And this was, they were ranked, I think they were in the top 10. But they came to Heinz Field, and that was the Pitt special. They beat Pitt on the, they basically stole a page out of the Philadelphia playbook, and they ran the Pitt special with Kenny Pickett catching a touchdown, the game clutching touchdown. I remember watching I was looking out my window calling my mom going, oh my god, they're gonna turn on the lights again. And sure enough, I guess the clock ticked down there, all the lights came on. It was just really cool, and they kind of cheered me up when I wasn't feeling too good. So that's probably why that tradition means a little bit more to me probably than it should to the general public, but hey, whatever.
Yeah, that's a really good story, Steve, and a lot better of a one than I thought you were going to tell when you said maybe I shouldn't tell this immediately following a conversation about bathroom stalls. So
Well, it's definitely more inspirational than bathroom stalls.
Yeah.
Or the lack of doors. Why would they put doors on it? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it probably made me feel a little like more, you know, upbeat and stuff, you know. So it was, I still, that's one of my favorite. In the future, spoiler, one of these podcasts, we're going to do like my favorite sports. And that's definitely that game. And I'm going to go into more detail in that podcast. But I was kind of saving that story for that podcast, but oh well. My excitement got the better of me. happens a lot now. Another cool tradition is the color coordinated black and gold for all the pro sports teams. So the black and gold color scheme, it comes from the coat of arms from William Pitt the Elder, the former Prime Minister of England. And that's actually who Pitt is named after, not Pitt the Younger, who is also Prime Minister of England. I know we're learning much more about English politics than we ever wanted to today, but hey, you know, school's in session. There is a funny Simpsons clip where Barney and Wade Boggs argue over who's the better, Prime Minister of England, him or I think it's Lord Palmerston. So Art Rooney was the first to use the colors for the Steelers when he founded them in 1933, which leads to an absolute, you think the Bumblebee uniforms are bad. You should see that uniform. Whew, that's an ouch. In 1948, the Penguins were, or the, not the Penguins, the Pirates were red, white, and blue, and they changed their colors to black and gold. And then from 1967 to 1980, the Penguins actually wore those cool navy blue and white ones. But in 1980, they switched to black and gold. And so in 1980, Pittsburgh, and since 1980, as far as I know, Pittsburgh's the only town where all the professional sports teams' colors are coordinated and the same. Black and gold, the city's colors. So, and it just looks cool. So, I mean, you know, not all other cities, I guess, can say that. I don't know what the other colors of those other cities are, but black and gold, everybody, seems to work well for us.
It is a cool tradition that you just say the black and gold, and it could be referring to any Pittsburgh sports team. Even though the gold's really yellow,
we'll
but that's
to,
okay.
We'll have to put a, it's on the crest of the city of Pittsburgh too, like whatever mm-hmm. crest we have, so it's kind of cool. Another, like, this is a very well-known tradition, the terrible towel. It was created by broadcaster Myron Cope for a playoff game in 1975 against the Baltimore Colts. And another interesting thing is all the proceeds from the sale are donated to the Allegheny Valley School, and this school cares for people who have mental and physical disabilities. After that, the introduction of the towel, the Steelers went on to win the playoff game again. They won that game against the Colts, and then they won the Super Bowl that year over the Cowboys. So it's just become like part of the fan base, man. Everybody has a terrible towel, and Steeler fans really have, like, you know, kind of, they take them everywhere. They go to, you know, Mount Everest, Afghanistan, you know, you can see them at your cousin's wedding, you know, next to the cookie table, you know, so It's just a really cool thing. I only get mine out for the big games, for the AFC Championship game, the Super Bowl. But my terrible towel went like 1 for 3 early on, so I think mine was broken. I don't know. Maybe I should have returned it for a new one. But maybe I got a dud terrible towel. I don't know. But they lost Super Bowl 30 and everything. This is one where every Sweet Caroline and the pierogi race is like we're kind of copying up our other people. Now everybody's copied this off of us. Ha ha! Take that, sports fans. So because everywhere you look now, every team has like some sort of towel with their team's logo on it and all that. I went to the Military Bowl once again, and at that game they actually, I think I still have that towel. They have them. They gave it was said the Military Bowl on it, and they gave you a little towel. A few teams, they have chosen to disrespect the terrible towel, and it always seems to lead to disastrous consequences. Bad things happen, man. Bad things. Of course, most famously was T.J. Houshmandzadeh. So the Bengals, after a win in Pittsburgh, he shined his shoes with the terrible towel, and then Carson Palmer paid the price by breaking his knee, and they lost the playoff game. So Lendell Waite and Keith Bullock, they like stomped on a terrible towel when they were blowing out the Steelers during a regular season game. And they actually, I think they lost the, they lost their playoff game when they were like the number one seed. So things really didn't work out too well for Tennessee. Also, Jacksonville mascot Jackson Deville. So I guess he was like, you know, disrespect. I think he was like just like stomping on it and stuff. So Jacksonville was leading, and then when he did that, they lost the game and went on a losing streak after that. So that might have just been like Jacksonville not being very good. I don't know that that had anything to do with the terrible towel. Is your terrible towel in full functioning order, Tim?
It is, and like you, it has mixed results. And like you, I probably have only brought it out for the bigger games. I don't know that I break it out for just any game. I think I still have my. I think the one I have is actually from like the inaugural season of Heinz Field. So that one's definitely seen some wear and tear over the years. And I think I brought it to the Super Bowl with me too. So when I was fortunate enough to attend Super Bowl 40, so. It's gotten some travel. I think I brought it to some other countries too. I brought it to places like Italy and Thailand, and it was one of those yinzers that, you know, took a picture in front of like the David statue with my terrible towel or whatever. So
nice. Did you make the David statue decent with it? Like,
that's exactly what I did, actually.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yes.
That's hilarious.
Yep.
That's incredible. Now that's a cool story. another great tradition that our city has, and that just a great thing, fireworks. So if you've lived around here for any amount of time, we shoot fireworks off for any reason at all, absolute any. You know, Pirates after home runs, July 4th, your kid's 8th birthday. If it's an event, it ain't an event until the fireworks are going off. The Pirates actually have a whole fireworks night called Sky Blast. And in 1984, I was there the night the fireworks exploded in the stands at the Three River Stadium. It was horrific. I was like young too. I was like in third grade. I remember that. And now I don't know. Yeah, there you go. Maybe explains like why I am the way I am. I saw like people burning with fireworks when I was very young. So. Pitt football even had a fireworks night. And also the Riverhounds, the minor league soccer team, they actually schedule a game on July 4th or whenever, you know, sometimes they have it on the 3rd. Whenever the fireworks for the city of Pittsburgh are, they schedule it because the way their stadium is you can see the fireworks perfectly from their stadium. So it's like whoever is doing – maybe Justin Acherno is doing the marketing for – the ticket marketing for the Riverhounds because he's smart enough to schedule that game around then. I think Pittsburgh in general, we're probably keeping the Zambellis up there in Newcastle in business. At the 250th year celebration, they actually had 17 different locations around the city shooting fireworks off. I remember they like – two barges on each of the rivers, and I guess there was like some on the bridges, and it was just everywhere. We have a great clip we're gonna link to about Atari fireworks night. It's Chuck Tanner talking about the Atari fireworks night. Here we go.
Fans, the Pirates and Atari have done a super job in bringing some fantastic fireworks displays to Three Rivers this year. This is Chuck Tanner inviting you to the final Atari Fireworks Night on Saturday, August the 21st. We'll be meeting the Tough Dodgers at 7:05. Then after that, Atari will present a fireworks display you people won't forget. Make your plans today and join us on Atari Fireworks Night, Saturday, August 21st. Call 323-1150.
Everything about that commercial is dated. You know, the Atari and giving the phone number without the area code.
I like the Stargell stars on Tanner's hat. So, of course, that was when the drug trials were kicking off there. So,
there was an alternate version of that commercial where it was like Dale Barra and I don't know, Lee Mazzilli. There was like two two Pirates players like secretly like playing Atari 2600 in the locker room, and Tanner like walks in on them. I'm sure but that's on YouTube that, somewhere too. Yeah, not for the cocaine thing, right?
Playing Atari, that's a problem. Some honorable mentions. We're not going to go over these in too detail. We also have the history of Zambelli fireworks, if you're really into that. We'll link that up on our website also. The parking lot's looking like a landfill after the Kenny Chesney concert. rain during the Three Rivers Arts Festival. Like, you know, in parts of the country where they have a drought, they should just move the Three Rivers Arts Festival there and they'll take care of their problem. Almost 100 years of one-party rule in Pittsburgh. We haven't had a Republican mayor since, what, 1933, I think? So, something like that. Cookie tables at weddings. I didn't know that was like a Western Pennsylvania thing until I went to, like, another. It's like, where's the cookies? What? breaking for absolutely no reason going into a tunnel, especially the Squirrel Hill Tunnel. Like, it's just like all the cars, like half the cars disappear or something when you go there. Some were ill-conceived. One was something called the Pittsburgh Greats Race. It's not the Pittsburgh Great Race, the Pittsburgh Greats Race. And it was like, kind of like they tried to play off like the pierogi race pit. And they had like Larry Fitzgerald, Mike Ditka, I think Dan Marino and Tony Dorsett, like, costumes, and people would run across the football field. It was a horrible idea, so I think they got rid of it. And of course the infamous Heather Like idea. Maybe Justin Acherno wasn't there to talk her out of it. Giving away a free drink at a blowout loss pit game to entice people to stay for the second half. That was part of, like, besides getting punished with taking away Sweet Caroline, she tried to entice him, like, hey, if you stay to watch, like, because it was like a really hot day, if you stay to watch, like, Pitt lose by like 40, you get a free pop. Woohoo, you know? Never mind if you bought like a pop with a free refill, you already have it. But anyway, not to besmirch our wondrous athletic director any more than I have today. Those are great traditions. If you have any more, feel free to let us know on Twitter. So anything else, any traditions that I missed there, Tim?
Blaming the coaches for every loss in Steeler history, does that count?
There you go. The offensive coordinator stinks.
Right.
There you go. Well, thank you for joining us. And hopefully, you'll enjoy all these traditions and we'll enjoy them far into the future. We'll catch you next time on Pittsburgh Sports Memories.
Bye, everybody.